Hello and welcome to episode 330 of Muse on Minis.
Musing and amusing.
This is John and I play Protector Domenoff.
Nigel, I play Kador.
Josh and I play Mercs.
Brent and I play Signar.
Seabass and I play Trolls.
Whoa.
Just an aside, totally unrelated to everything. I was on Destiny yesterday and PvP and I ran into a guy named Darth Seabass and I was like, oh my god, it's Scott's evil twin.
Amazing.
You're joking. There was actually a dude with that as his handle?
Yeah.
Oh my god. I am both jealous and amazed.
Well, awesome. I guess we were kind of like just tiptoeing around a lot of different subjects, but I thought one of the more interesting ones would be for us to revisit SR 2017 and if we have any current thoughts after seeing the WTC and after playing a lot of games. I know Nigel kind of broke it down really quick and easy. Did you want to share that thought, Nigel?
Yeah, I just basically said that it doesn't matter. You know, I think what prompted the conversation was Scott was asking about armor skew and if they're viable and all that. And I said basically every list, it doesn't really matter what it is. It's viable. If you can play in the middle of the table and it's fast, you have to be able to basically be able to not let your opponent run you over by turn two, which is a tough ask. A lot of armor skew is slow, but if you have a fast armor skew, then who cares? It's good. And same thing with troops. You can do a gun line if it's capable of lining up in the middle of the table or, you know, in the 40% mark of the table or whatever and not giving away all the zones.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I think, why Haley 3 is one of the exceptions to the rule, why she can kind of play a gun line, is because those stupid apparitions or whatever they are, the Haleys contest so well.
Mm-hmm.
They get away with it.
Yeah. Well, I actually think it's a twofold issue when you're looking at playing Steamroller, because it's not just like, how do I not get steamrolled, right? Like, how do I not get, you know, boxed out, so to speak? But it's also what in my army is capable of parking in a place and receiving an alpha and still managing to hold the zone through that turn. Like, those pieces are actually exceptionally valuable. I stridently dislike the Siege Crawler's rules. I don't think it's a great piece, but Steamroller actually is making it a pretty nice piece, because arm 20 up to 23 with Ostrom's feet and 40 boxes plus the huge base, making it super easy to contest two, sometimes maybe three different scenario scoring
elements,
areas, whether it's a flag in two zones or whatnot. Like, that's that its ability to sit there, receive the charges and survive is such a huge benefit to play Steamroller 2017. And so I think armor bricks at least don't have to answer that second part of the equation as much. Like, yeah, a lot of them are slower, and so getting up and into zones is a problem. But once you're into the zone, it's often, you know, you can often feel relatively secure for a turn. You know, you're not going to immediately lose that zone turnaround without significant investment from your opponent. And that's kind of when I'm building lists now and thinking about Steamroller 2017, those are pieces I'm looking for. I'm looking for fast pieces, flexible pieces, but I'm also looking for hard pieces, because those are very valuable to playing a even game.
I think that's a really good point. Another thing that I kind of wanted to raise that I've noticed is you can't be a very slow, methodical list and do well in SR 2017, because there's too many scenarios where they create parity by, you know, you kind of have your zone on your side of the board and your opponent has their zone and you're both kind of scoring your own zone. But if you're slow, what happens is you get jammed out of their zone, so you have trouble contesting it or getting across to it. And then they're fighting on your, you know, two thirds up the board, you know, in your, you know, near your deployment. And so they're having an easier time contesting, and it sort of turns the game on its side, where you just get a little bit more behind every turn because they're getting that free point that you're not getting.
Yeah.
And it's a disaster if you ever get a situation where you actually can't get into their zone. So if you have like slow elements and they're able to play in a way to deny you the ability to get there, you know, whatever, pinning your jacks with medium based models that aren't easy to remove or whatever. So that you can't, you know, I've had situations where I literally couldn't get into a zone because there was just too much stuff between, you know, just trying to get there. And that's, you know, if It's a disaster. If your opponent scores on your turn.
Oh yeah.
It is like an unmitigated disaster for 2017.
So, if they score an unequal number of points, if they yes. score one more, like if they go up points on your turn, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So your lists have to have some flexibility of movement, I think.
Yeah, no, I actually think Steamroller 2017 is kind of brilliant, honestly, because it's the first time that I've felt that the scenario packet encourages sort of broad list builds in and of itself. Like, there are exceptions to the rule, obviously. Ghostfleet has a mechanic that is absurdly powerful in 2017, so they don't really have to think about, how to build their list to play into it. But the typical list that you sit down to build, like, it encourages you to build, you know, kind of across the spectrum, a variety of types, whether they be hard units, high defense units, fast and flexible units. I think the packet in and of itself, separate from other rules that exist in the game, at the very least, encourages sort of that kind of broad and flexible lists that we've always been like, well, it'd be nice if the game was, you know, broad and flexible and not all super spammy. I actually don't really think that there's a lot of specific spam that does super well in 2017 all on its own because of that fact. Like I said, Ghostfleet, obviously an exception to the rule, but
Ghostfleet's not really spammy though. They have like battle engines. They have different types of units. I mean, sure, they spam the Revenant Pirates, but it's a fairly diverse list.
I would argue that it's two spams blended together. It's the Revenant Pirate, like recursion spam, stapled onto incorporeal spam. But yeah, it's certainly not like I take 10 Marauders and that's my list.
Yeah, what idiot does that?
Hey, you also get 4 solos.
So technically, which is the best kind of correct, right? You're not actually spamming because you have 4 other solos.
Yeah, and you're spreading it around, too. They're not even spamming the solos.
Yeah, probably even have a unit somewhere there.
Yeah, I got a unit, too.
So, like, one thing that, and it kind of goes back to what Josh was saying, but one thing I've noticed is that when Nigel was talking about, like, you have to be quick enough to get to the middle, or you have to at least be quick enough and then resilient enough to just not lose on scenario going into, like, turn 2-3. One thing I've noticed is that, like, even when we're like, even when lists are like skewing something really hard, right? So you're doing an armor skew. So you're running, in my case, you know, like 2 or 3 Maulers, an Earthborn Mulg, or 5 Maulers. That list is shockingly good, by the way. So you're skewing something like really hard, but you still like, I still find myself like reaching for Highwaymen or reaching for Rune Shapers or reaching for Fire Eaters or whatever the case may be. Because you still, like, even though I can still skew armor and I can have this, like, really huge brick of dudes or jacks or whatever, I still have to have something that gets up there. So if, like, I think in my mind, the caveat to that is that if your armor skew can't be quick enough to get to the middle of the table, then you have to have something in that list that is to buy you enough time to let your armor take over, right? And I think... because of that, and I might not be doing a really good job of explaining that, but because of that phenomenon is why we're starting to see lists kind of shift backwards away from these super hard skews into lists that are still going to predominantly feature something. Like, this list is predominantly an armor brick, but it's still running a pair of Eliminators or a unit of Kyle's Assassins or a pair of Rune Shapers or whatever the case may be. Like, because you have to build in that flexibility. And I think like what that does in effect is not only does it force like it kind of forces a little bit of variation of like what lists you're building. But I also feel like it opens up options for those lists that might not have existed before. So like all of a sudden now you have a unit whose primary role is anti-infantry. It may not have ever really seen a lot of play. But now that like you're starting to see like infantry based lists or at the minimum like combined arms lists show back up, now all of a sudden those units may become a much better alternative than they were before. And I'm experiencing that with troll list building because I'm playing a lot of stuff that I'm like, I don't know if I really like this. And then I put it on the table and I play a couple games with it. And I'm like, yeah, the anti-infantry capability was actually really, really good. I need to explore that more. Did that make any sense?
Mm-hmm. Brent, did you? How are you rocking on 2017?
It's been hit and miss. On, I think it comes also comes down a lot to what you're playing. On a lot of that. So I've found that I've been playing a couple of lists lately. I've been trying with where I just it's the definition of just jam and win on scenario, and just throw away large chunks of your army until you do.
For example, do you want to give an example of that? Like, what does that look like?
In- so I did that with Skari 1 Dark Host with, and I realize it's not going to sound like it's throw away large chunks of your army, but it was Bane Riders and double Wraith Engines and just park them in front of your opponent and score. I won most games scoring with Skari off the back flag and maybe a unit in the backfield, as opposed to Assassination. I suspect Raider theme will do the same thing. Park 25 people in your opponent's deployment zone and then score the back half of the board.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, I've been talking to a friend of ours that's been playing the Scourge theme force with the Negra 1, and, like, that's pretty much his game plan. Like, he's just going to jam you out with a whole bunch of Satixis and then make your life really, really hard to see if you can get into a zone before you lose.
So. That's actually an interesting facet, I think, of Steamroller 2017 as well, is the role to go first. And it used to be that I would take Anastasia de Bray so that I was 66% to go first, right? Like, that was Mark II. Like, there was no thought process. It was just take Anastasia so you're more likely to go first. Now I actively want to win the role because I want to be able to look at the table, take into account the scenario and the matchup, and decide. You know, if you're playing against a list with a ton of Satixis Raiders that are clearly planning on trying to jam you out of the zone, but you win a long game against them, well, then you 100% want to go first. And it's a pain in the ass on the bottom of their two that they're going to start scoring, but it helps you get up the table, right? Whereas, you know, a lot of the time you do want to go second, but it's just, it's a legitimately interesting decision at the beginning of every game as to what you're going to do, how the board looks, how the terrain looks. I think that's a sort of underappreciated aspect of Steamroller 2017 that I quite enjoy and that I think that has a lot of depth to it.
Yeah, I've been asked several times by players in my local area, like, well, should I always go first or should I always go second? And then I look at them and I'm like, only a Sith deals in absolutes. Like, there's no way for me to answer that because, like, there's so many dependent factors. I was playing a game last Friday night. I was playing Grimkin versus Mercs, Fianna. And even though I kind of goofed up and didn't take any Kravitz and kind of got blew up by the Commodore cannon, we were talking about the decision to go first, and I decided to go first because I didn't want to run the risk of a bunch of pirates jamming me out of zones. Like, I had to get the real estate. And I don't know that I maybe necessarily would have even thought about that decision in Steamroller 2016. Like, I don't think that would have been a passing thought to me as to who's going to go first and second.
No, absolutely not.
I do think if you're like War Machine for Dummies, and then they ask that question, you know, if like it was a book, I would say if you have to ask, just always go first. Like, if you don't know, then just going first will, generally speaking, work out for you more. But
that's interesting, Nigel, because I actually feel like in 2017, I would advise them to go second.
Yeah, I think it depends on your list build, Josh, because you have to have a list that's fast enough to go to make going second a good gambit, you know?
I mean, I feel like, so if you're outmatched in speed, I totally agree with you, John. But if the lists are relatively equal, going second, I feel like, is a pretty big advantage just because not only do you get to pick terrain, but because you have that extra turn cushion on scoring, and it lets you adapt a little bit earlier and quicker to what happens in those first couple turns. I think unless you are outmatched on speed, there has to be a good reason not to go second. I think it's a choice. I think it's an interesting choice.
No, I don't disagree with what you're saying. I'm just saying if you don't know, then just go first. Like, if it's not obvious to you that you can have an advantage going second, then you shouldn't be going second. You should just go first. Like, if you have a faster army than them, and so you stand to be able to score, your speed still benefits you if you go first. You still get way more table, and you can still play that. It's not as advantageous, but, you know, so it's just if you're inexperienced and you aren't sure exactly what, how you're going to capitalize on your speed, you going first isn't going to kill you. But going second and not knowing what you're doing will kill you.
That's
actually... Yeah, that's actually, I just had an interesting kind of side grade thought. Sorry, I'm going to go off on a little bit of a tangent. But I'm just thinking about the benefits of having the faster army in Steamroller is so momentous, but I don't see people always utilizing it to the best effect. So definitely like running forward. So if you have like the threat range advantage, you should take advantage of that. But sometimes your opponent will sort of timidly come into the zone, right? And sort of give you some control points because of your speed advantage sort of forces that on them, so to speak, because they know that they don't want to give you a ton of charges or whatever, or walk into your threat ranges. But sometimes they push everything in, which I think often is the more correct play. I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, I think like we were talking earlier in the – sorry, Scott. I'll just real quick, I'll get my point out of the way for you.
No, you're fine. You're fine.
We were talking earlier about Ion and Holt affecting armor skew and if that was a big thing. And I was like, I think the big thing they're affecting is the anchor babies. Like, so that's going to change the way people contest objectives is if you can't have gremlin swarms in the Halys and a few of the other pieces like that that are – you know, even like a Wraith engine, like a lot of people just use a Wraith engine just to sort of be an anchor baby on three zones. So like that, I think their impact will actually affect that crap more. But yeah, it's like, yeah, towing into a zone is quite a dangerous gamble. If it's not a really good, like I tow in with just two eliminators, I never feel good about it. I never feel good about that. And if I had a gremlin swarm, I'd feel better about it. And then, but yeah, usually I just have to like shove everything in their face and hope they just can't kill it all. And I can kill, you know, I can retaliate with enough stuff.
I know from my perspective, when you talk about making a commitment to a zone, as a troll player, we don't have as many anchor models as we used to have. There's just not ARM 23 Mulg sitting in the table, right? That just behind a wall of all things. But we do still have some very nice anchor pieces. But the biggest thing I see is I'll walk up to a game being played and I'll see both players. And I'll see one guy like burst super far forward with his army and he runs up and he takes like this awesome board position. And then I'll see the other guy like barely step into his zone, right? And he'll put like two or three models just barely towing into the zone because he's trying to do what you're talking about, John. He's trying not to give away his army to an alpha. And so I'll look at the table and then I'll come back and I'll talk to the players after the game's done. And I'm like, well, how did that game go? And he's like, oh, well, he won 5-0 on scenario. Okay. And I'm like, so... you know, how close of a game was it, you know, in terms of attrition? And they're just like, oh, nothing really died. Like, he killed like a couple of my guys and just kept clearing the zone. And the thing that I've tried to explain to some of those players, at least from my perspective, is when you're stuck in a situation like that, you really have two choices. You can lose on scenario or you can lose on attrition. And if you take your chances with attrition and you push yourself up the board and you position well enough, you can mitigate the attrition. But if you don't put yourself in that zone, you can't mitigate losing on control. Right. Like if he clears you out, you're just done. So at some point you kind of have to bite the bullet and just be like, OK, well, they joined the army so they could die. So now I'm going to send them somewhere where they can die. And you're going to send in some dudes. And yeah, you're going to like take the initial hit on attrition. But like it's a necessary evil because you can't let them get that far ahead. And I see people do that a lot with like especially with like units that threat like a really long way. Like they'll try to get up to where like they can threaten the counterpunch if they come any further forward. But the reality to it is that if the first player is already in a position to score on his second turn, then it's almost impossible to get people to understand. They're not going to come forward. He's going to sit there and score. He's going to make you come forward so he can get you. So you really have to, like, you have to play cagey. You don't want to give away too much. But I guess the moral to the story is you can't be afraid to get your butt in a zone and roll some dice. Like, you can't be afraid of that because if you are, you are definitely going to lose that game on scenario.
Yeah, I actually, after having played some, I don't really like relying on hard-to-kill pieces. Like, I would rather have a game plan that has me putting my entire army in the zones, you know, coming forward. And there's several, at least in Protectorate, there's several ways you can do that. You can do that with Vindictus, with his feet. It allows you to put everything in the zones and then put his protective feet up and just basically be like, all right, come at me, bro. I'm here. I like that game plan much better than some other game plans that I've kind of messed around with, which is using things like Kiki Monks or Knights Exemplar Seneschals that are fairly difficult to kill as contesting pieces. But sometimes they just get killed, and then you're really behind the eight ball.
I think the that strategy requires you to have a really big hammer, like, you know, a reserve hammer to hit people that come for your, you know, your hard pieces. It needs to, your hard piece needs to both require a significant investment from your opponent and then be backed up by something that's capable of killing enough models to be worth the fact that you gave up 1 point when they invested that much. And I think that's a hard list to build for sure. So I agree with you that if you're capable of putting your entire army in the zone and not getting punished for it, a la Ghost Fleet, a la Testament of Menoth, then that's awesome. Like, that's by far the best strategy to play Steamroller 2017, without question. But, not every list is capable of doing that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you can do that with – I mean, I think there's a lot of casters that have defensive feats. Harkovich kind of allows you to do that, you know, Doomy 3, where you're kind of putting your – You're kind of seeding, you know, you're going to get, you know, your opponent's going to get the alpha, right? It's just the fact of life. So you're just like, give it to them, but you give it to them where they're never going to score any points because you've put your entire army in the middle of the table and said, you know, come get some, and then force them to play that long attrition game. And then hopefully you can come out on top. Like, I think that's a viable strategy as well.
Aside to that is the old give them more than they can chew kind of strategy. So like you can kind of look at it like, oh, the old way I would have towed like one jack or a unit of eliminators into the back of this zone and just made it kind of hard for them to get to them, but maybe they can, and then they score a point. You know, the other option is, yeah, they can kill some stuff, but you cram so much stuff in there that they can't possibly kill it all, and then you get to, you know, attack back against the legions of their stuff that's coming in. Again, not every list can be built that way, but if you have a list that's capable of generating a high volume of attacks per model, that list is probably a reasonable one to shove into the more than you can chew. That or armor bricks. That's where I think armor bricks can make up a little bit of their ground in the Steamroller.
I think we're also kind of seeing a genesis of that kind of, like that kind of like, I don't know, that baiting tactic of putting out that like one really cool thing. I know for Trolls, Double Battle Engine has been very popular. Caterers picked up on Double Battle Engine, copycats. There's like Arcantric Force generators are showing up, even though there's some controversy, I guess, around how good they are. I have no idea. But we're starting to see, because I feel like Battle Engines, a lot of Battle Engines specifically fill that role really well. Because they're such a pain in the butt to deal with. They have a huge footprint. They contest everything. And on top of that, they're typically very difficult to remove. Like when the average battle engine costs like 16 points, they require more than 16 points of effort to get rid of on the average. Like for the most part, they do. Which I think is really interesting because we're starting to see lists built around that concept, right? So double battle engine Thagrosh lists are centered around the concept of like, I'm going to put these out here. I'm going to let you try and chew on them. And then like, you'll probably kill them. Like, I'll give you that. You'll kill them. And then when you kill them, I'm going to eat everything that ate them. Like, I'm still going to go up because you're going to lose 40 points to my 32, or you're going to lose 45 to my 32. And then at that point, like it becomes a real game. And now we're both in the middle of the table and we're fighting it out. Like, and I think that's really cool. I think we're seeing like that kind of play beginning to evolve a little bit into Steamroller 2017.
Brent, you're awful quiet tonight. Do you have anything you want to share?
I was just listening in, and I think some of it depends on your list building philosophy and what you like to play. I keep listening to Scott say things like, I like to put something in there and then counterpunch and play a troll brick. And I listen to you, John, say, I like to put everything in the zone because I play Testament heavily and I can bring all of it back. And I realized that lately I've been just building all of my lists primarily for speed, although I've been looking at Centurions and Signar more heavily in this edition in particular, looking at a potential for Centurion spam instead of Storm Clouds, just to deal with the extreme threat ranges some of Crix is putting out right now.
Yeah, I think there's huge value in pieces. I mean, Scott mentioned one earlier, which was the Arcantric Force Generator, which I believe has Carapace and unable to be charged, right? So it is a
Carapace
huge
polarity field.
Yeah, it's a huge problem piece in scenario because it's very difficult to deal with. Like, shooting it off the table is not a it requires significant resources to do. It is difficult. So if you have pieces like that that allow you to sort of stay in scenario without having to overcommit, then you can kind of build a strategy around that. I think that's cool. But like I said, you know, I kind of like the, and I mean, Ghost Fleet does this, right? The, I'm going to put everything forward into the zones and just run you over in scenario. And you get a lot of like cheap, easy victories that way. Which is why I think Vindictus is actually a surprisingly strong caster. I think any caster that allows you, that has like occultation that allows you to get some stuff up that's kind of hard to deal with, could help with that, or protective feats. I don't know if there's.
I think any caster with a strong defensive feat paired with models that are capable of doing like a lot of work on a single turn, like those two, that pair should usually generate like a pretty nice push. I've been considering playing Fiona because she has some tools that are somewhat interesting into Ghost Fleet, and her defensive feat is essentially pretty much my stuff doesn't die for a turn. So, I think defensive feats are maybe stronger than they used to be. I don't know. They've always been strong, but...
Yeah, I mean, control feats do a lot the same thing, right?
Right.
I can't believe I didn't raise this point. Anything you have that allows you to move your opponent's models is incredibly powerful in 2017 because it's already a balancing act trying to contest everything. And so if you have things that like push or slam or, reposition your opponent's models, take them over, whatever, like all of those things are insanely valuable. Bulldoze, what's Ostrom's spell? I forget.
Unstoppable force
is incredible. You know, I mean, Josh did something which was annoyed the shit out of me actually with a Basher and Unstoppable Force is he bumped my Jack back 2 inches. And because he had declared a charge, that extra 2 inches of movement allowed him to get enough for a slam. So he grand slammed the Jack on top of that, even though I was pretty much engaged with the stupid thing.
Yeah. You started base to base with the Basher and I used a gunner to push with Unstoppable Force to push to push your Jack 2 inches off the Basher. And then declared a slam with the Basher, and when it contacted, pushed you another 2 inches so it could get its full 3 inches of movement to grand slam you. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I rolled a one on the dice, which was wah-wah. But
yeah, I still moved my Jack 7 inches that turn.
Yeah.
I'm sure that wasn't tilting at all.
Well, I mean, it still matters to be in the zone by like half an inch because he rolled a one. So I'm sure it was tilting for Josh.
Yeah, it was a little tilting, honestly.
Well, it's also... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, so the converse is also true. Your ability to move models is extremely powerful, but the ability to tell your opponent no, they can't move them. So things that have, I think, was it sturdy? Is that the new rule where they can't be moved, pushed, or slammed?
Yep.
Is also incredible.
They can be slammed. They just can't be pushed.
Yep. So, and that.
But it's still
that
good.
Sorry.
No, you're good. You're good, Scott.
I was going to say that was actually the point I was about to make is that, so things that I think have been criminally underplayed, walking into where we're at now with SR 2017, clam jacks, like the clam jack with Reign of Death. I can never remember its name.
Devastator.
Thank you. Like that thing is criminally underplayed right now. Like the ability to just get in a zone. I mean, it might just be my perception. I know I haven't seen a lot of them, but that might just be my lens, like looking at the world through my lens. But things that are like it really strong though, like Doomshaper 3 obviously is at the top of that list. Implacability is just a ridiculous spell for this game. So like, but you also have clamjacks. I think the gum bunnies can't be moved by a slam, right? Can't be pushed or moved by a slam.
Dwarf jacks can't be pushed.
There you go. Yeah. And there's a host of other themes that that have like the ability to not be moved or pushed. Earth's Blessing is an animus, is really strong. Stone form, obviously. So there's a lot of like really cool abilities that you can do. And so all of a sudden, like, this is another thing that I thought was really interesting about where we're at now. Stuff that was typically considered overpriced or not very valuable in SR 2016 now kind of has like, it has legs going into SR 2017. Like, there's value to some of these animi that maybe we didn't see a lot of value in before, where there's value in not being able to be pushed or knocked down, or there's more value in it now than we did see at the beginning of Mark III, which I also think is really interesting, because it's forcing, I think, really good players, really cagey players, are going to look at what's out there and then look at what the environment is. And then I think a lot of people are going to go back and they're going to start reassessing what they feel is good in the environment. And we've already seen things like the Earthborn Dire Troll, who was already good, but now in SR 2017, you know, nobody questions his power strength 15. You just accept the fact that he's power strength 15 because he's so good at everything else that, like, he's just the power strength 15 is just the tax you pay for getting him. And you don't care because you can fix that. And I think, like, we'll see that with other models and other selections. And I think we already are at some point, because I've seen more Clamjacks recently than I have ever seen in Mark III. Earthborn Dire Trolls are popping up all over the place for all six of us troll players. So like there's like, I think like we're actually beginning to see that. Pathfinder also is another ability that probably should be mentioned when you're talking about really important abilities for SR 2017, because there's so much terrain on the table. Like, you don't want, it feels to me like you really don't want to be able to just get 2 inches into a zone and then get stuck in rough terrain, because then you can just get slammed out super easy, right?
Oh man. So, like just to piggyback on that, I have to say, when I first started playing the Leia Lee's Resistance theme, I was like, so, you know, all the models get Pathfinder, like, that's cute, but whatever. But it's so good. It is so good. Like, that a benefit is so good because of exactly what you're saying, because there's so much terrain on the tables now.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like Circle had an advantage there that maybe wasn't fully exploited. And then now that we're actually seeing tables kind of configured the way that Mark III, I think 2017 is the way Mark III is meant to be played. I think it's the other half of that puzzle. And then now that we're beginning to see that stuff that, like, people commonly considered overcosted, all of a sudden now, like, well, wait a minute, you know, maybe the Stalker is actually worth 19 points because Pathfinder alone is worth points on that model. Like, it's such a good ability.
Well, the only problem, I understand the other side of that argument, just to play devil's advocate for a second, though, and that is, War Machine is ultimately a game about peace trading, and it's very difficult to peace trade a 19-point Stalker in the world that we live in today.
Yeah.
Like, it's really difficult because there's really long threat ranges, and there's a lot of things that just eliminate that. You know, it takes what, 4 points of Revenant Pirates to kill a Stalker or something silly, you know?
Well, I mean, it takes like 4 points of Revenant Pirates to kill anything in the game, so.
Okay, so that's... Yeah, that's well, but that's maybe even then, though, like, Circle was never meant to trade piece to piece, though. Like, everybody who thinks Circle was meant to trade piece to piece, I actually feel like that's a correct assessment.
No, I agree with you, Scott. I'm just saying, like, the world we live in today, because you have to contest, you know, 4 different areas on a table, like, what does the Stalker do?
Yeah, I think traditional Circle lists that we saw in Mark II can't survive, which is why Circle players are upset right now. And I get that, or are down on their faction. Like, the list that we're used to, that we would identify as a Circle list, that list is 100% non-viable Steamroller 2017.
So I've got a question. I want to do, as an experiment, I kind of want to try something. I just want to hear what you guys think about it. So there's a new theme benefit for the Protectorate Guardians of the Temple theme, which allows Temple Flame Guard to gain tough and steady when they're in base-to-base with each other.
I wish it was Guardians of the Hidden Temple.
Yeah.
I feel like they really missed out there.
Yeah. but I'm wondering if you could play, like, I mean, there's a couple different variations of this, but I was thinking about just taking like 30 TFG because I think that's the max field allowance.
And, are they a 3?
I think they're a 3. I'd have to double check. I think they're FA3. But you get 30 TFG all with UAs. They all get Iron Sentinel for a turn, so they get +3 armor. Is it +3 or +4? +3, I think. Not Iron Sentinel, Iron Zeal.
Yeah. But if you played that with like a Testament and you tried to go second, you could literally like jam up the board for the entire game, just play fast, bring a bunch of them back, and then at the end of the game, just clear one zone, score your 1 point, and, you know, because you went.
Temple Flame Guards are unlimited, John. They're FAU.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So I could literally do like 40 of them. But you, I don't know. I think you could play pretty hard in scenario with that list. Like, it would be pretty difficult because they're already Def 13 with set defense. So they're already sort of annoying to deal with. And they can shield wall if it's not disadvantageous for you to do so.
Yeah.
And they're speed 6. So they're definitely relevant in zones pretty quickly if they want to be.
It sounds good in theory, John, but I think we've already seen it with Strakov 2 Legion of Steel. It's the same thing except without the recursion.
It is, yeah.
It works.
Yeah.
There's a better version of Legion of Steel without countercharges.
Yeah, no countercharges. But I also get Ashen Veil, which is pretty funny with TFG, because then you could run them in a cloud and just have like the one unit interspersed amongst all of them.
No, I'm saying it's probably better than Legion in most cases.
Yeah, he's saying it's a better version of those.
No, I understood that. Yeah, I was just thinking, like, I don't know. I don't know if I really want to paint 30 TFG, but I don't even know if I really want to play that style of list. That sounds boring, but...
But, I mean, by the same token, that's the exact same list as whatever used to be Axis tier. I personally feel it's probably LeCompte now with... I'm going to bring back 12 dudes a turn and be up by one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So quick question, John.
Yeah.
Do you have 30 Temple Flame Guard?
I've got 10.
Can I borrow some Temple Flame Guard and a Warcaster from you?
Yeah. I'm sure.
I feel like, because I actually like Legion of Steel. I love Legion of Steel. It's one of my favorite lists in the game. So like the thought of like being able to do like Legion of Steel and Minoth with like a whole bunch of dudes that like can recur, like it's like Legion of Steel, but on like some amazing like extraterrestrial like power boost, like power level 9000.
Well,
I think you can continuously recur. So that sounds amazing. So I'm in.
Slow down a little bit. They're only power 10, where your guys are power 13, and we don't have access to Battle Lust. So it's not. It is a big difference. It is a large difference.
Yeah, but you can. There's recursion. And recursion makes everything better. It's like,
well, I think tough no knockdown Ashen Veiled TFG that get recurred probably would cause somebody to go crazy. Like, I'm pretty sure that would be tilting as hell.
Yeah, absolutely it would, because you're going to play the game for time, right? You're just going to be like, okay, kill me, and you're going to burn through your turn, and they're going to be like, I have to make 37,000 attacks, and so they're going to waste time making all those attacks. And you're going to be a good player. You're going to be a good boy. And you're going to have the dice ready for the tough checks. And you're going to help them get through as fast as they can. And then they're still going to clock. And when it comes down to like 5 minutes and you've got 20 minutes left on your clock and they're freaking out and sweating and it's a horribly tilting game, they're going to reach out to your hand and you're going to say, I accept. Because winning on clock is your plan.
Oh, it's retarded.
I mean, I figure Ghost Fleet does it. Axis did it. Axis is probably going to do it again.
Ghost Fleet doesn't win on clock. Ghost Fleet wins on scenario.
No. Ghost Fleet doesn't have to win on clock, but it totally could if it chose to.
It could.
Yeah. If Ghost Fleet gets the back pedal on scenario and they can't pull ahead fast enough, for whatever reason that could be, Ghost Fleet absolutely can and does win on clock. I've seen that happen a lot.
Actually, that's something I would like changed in Steamroller is the it's only a minor change, and I think Keith alluded to it last week, but the 15-second runoff I don't think is necessary anymore because there's a turn limit. So you can't get into the like back and forth. The reason why they originally put that in where you have to at least take 15 seconds on your turn was because people would literally just do the slap the clock back and forth, and it degenerated into real stupid real fast. But there's literally no reason to do that now because – you only get 7 turns to play. So there's none of this, like...
It doesn't feel like there's much of a point behind it anymore.
Yeah.
But, John, I think you need to start painting Flame Guard for 2 weeks from now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'll just play Exemplar Flame.
Is it 2 weeks from now?
2.5.
Yeah, 2.5.
Okay. 2.5.
I gotta find a battle toilet for 2.5 weeks from now.
What's a battle toilet? Is that the battle engine?
That's the battle engine, yeah. the dwarf battle engine, this siege crawler, is the battle toilet.
I actually have a buddy who's got one painted that I don't know if he's playing. I'll check with him for you.
That'd be awesome. Thank you, Scott.
Yeah, no problem. Let me message. I can message him right now, actually.
We got 2.5 weeks.
I'm mainly doing that just to make sure that I don't forget, because God knows I get space brain sometimes.
Fair enough.
I'm considering playing in the last chance qualifier.
Uh-huh.
I got to figure out if I can get the store covered. Like, that's fair. Sure.
Yeah.
The big thing. Just as an aside, John, like, if you want help with that, train me. Like, I'm a pretty trustworthy person, so if I can help, let me know. If not, no big deal. We can talk about that offline.
I don't know, Scott. We have a rigorous training academy that we have to send you to. It's exactly one course, 10 minutes long.
Yeah,
and not everybody makes the cut, and so
it was real tough for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Josh is all like, I'm drinking Bloody Marys.
Yep.
Well, I mean, if that's all that it takes, then I'll be like your employee of the month, because I can't even drink.
Nice.
But you can. Since last year you were trying to do Rum Machine with Dion.
Last year I didn't quite have the same respect for my continuous and ongoing health that I do this year. So... Look, mistakes were made. We went through a case of beer determining how much fury I had on my sentry stones at the beginning of my turn. Like, we had nowhere to go but up. So, like, we were like, okay, well, that's it. If we can't settle this with beer, then let's settle it with rum. So we were going to play Rum Machine. And that's when several of our friends, thank you, Brett Fogle, stepped in and refused to let me kill myself by playing Dion at Rum Machine.
I'm glad there's some people with, like, some self-control at these things. Having watched Josh upside down and... a trash can several times.
What's your point?
Buchan rally. Oh my god. Actually, Beer Machine is great if you're not doing it.
False. It's only good if you are doing it. I always feel bad for you. You poor sober fools on the outside.
You don't have to be. You could watch it and not be sober, Josh, but you also don't have to, like, kill yourself.
I guess that's true.
I was always trying to, like, drink ourselves into a result where we were both, like, spewing in 360 degrees, like, at the same time. Like, it was dueling fountains. That would be amazing.
I love that it took us basically, like, two turns and a half a bottle of liquor each to realize, like, oh, no, when the dice is statistically stacked against me, I shouldn't drink. I can't re-roll it. Like,
yeah. He's sitting on fours. I shouldn't make him re-roll this.
Yeah, like you get into it initially and you're just like flush with the power of like making
go on, I'm sorry.
No, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I remembered it. Brandon Shirley, I was talking to him a couple weeks ago and he was bringing it up. He's like, Jesus, he brought up that game and he was like, you guys were like 3 hours in. He was like, it was the longest game I played, and I gave up at like 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. And it was like, you guys had like literally accomplished nothing. And I was like, wait, Brandon, you were there?
Yep. I mean, that's false. We had not accomplished nothing. I successfully won the right to get a free throg through drinking.
Mm-hmm.
And then you successfully killed that throg after I realized it was impossible. I would like... immediately drink myself to death to keep it alive and it still wouldn't live.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we accomplished something. I got a free throg and you removed it.
Yep.
No, I only sighed because I only sighed because I can't be a part of this. And it is quite fun. It's bad for me.
Can they hook you up to like a dialysis? Like, can you just have one like connected to you while you drink?
I mean, I could
just be like, Doc, I'm going to War Machine weekend. You put one on wheels for me. I'm just going to wheel it around with me.
Yeah, hold on a second. Wait a minute. They do make portable machines.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Scott, everything you're saying right now needs to stop.
Brent, you cannot be the voice of reason. Nobody takes your voice seriously enough. Like, I appreciate you trying to be a good friend to Scott, but we need somebody that has, like, a little more gravitas, I think.
Because yeah, Scott's immediately started taking like Facebook pics of like spaghetti right now. Look what you're not eating, Scott. And here's the margarita I'm washing it down with.
Gambro Phoenix portable dialysis machine, $399.99 on eBay.
There you go.
Consult your doc. See if that would work. If that would do the trick.
Yup. All right.
God, so don't do
about
that.
That whole thing about clown. Like I'm about that whole thing about willing to help out at over War Machine Weekend, John. I may not be employee of the month anymore. We'll see how this works.
Yeah. No, if I can get the store covered for, cause that first day is really busy. So I always feel guilty, stepping away, but I kind of want to play in the last chance qualifier cause I kind of want to smoke some fools.
Like I said, just talk to me, like just send me a message or whatever.
I thought Scott was playing the last chance qualifier.
Yeah. Scott, how are you going
to, so the reason why I'm not playing in the last chance qualifier is because there's actually a couple different reasons, but there's been enough people, like particularly there's a group in Missouri and there's some other folks that just want to meet me. They just want to know who I am and they want to play games and they want to goof off. And that sounds like really exciting.
How are you going to do that if you're working?
Well, if it's just for Friday, it's for Friday. I mean, like I'm making plans for like Saturday.
Scott, did you think you were going to put in the last chance qualifier past Friday?
Oh, wow.
Also.
Wow.
Well.
Oh, Scott.
I suppose that depends, Josh.
If you are playing the LCQ on Saturday, those people will be happy to cheer you on from the sides, I'm positive. That's and if you are not, those people will be ecstatic to meet you.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say you should play in the last chance qualifier. I don't think I could handle it if you were working and I was playing. Like that doesn't seem right.
No, classic because it's John. Not.
What's that?
It's
a classic it's actually, John. Go ahead, Scott.
I'm sorry. I'm talking over.
You're good.
I apologize.
Where's that John?
Oh God, stop. No, I actually don't mind because like I had a lot of stuff going and so. I'm really just kind of looking forward to just hanging out with friends and just chilling out. So I don't know how much I really want to get into like really hard competition. I really just kind of want to go and just play some games and just goof off and have fun with all my friends. So I think like that's really kind of the core of it. Like I'm not looking to make this one like super competitive. I still want to play in like some 8-man scrambles and stuff. And I want to play like some casual games and stuff with some of the folks that, you know, have offered or want to play games with me or whatever. And I promised like lunch to a buddy of mine who's going to be there. But I don't know that I necessarily want to make it like super competitive. So that's actually why. So it's not like, oh, Scott's going to, you know, work at the Muse booth so John can go play. Like that's not really it. It's not that at all. It's just literally like I don't have, like, I'm not looking to make this like the most super competitive thing that I can possibly make it. I just want to go and have fun and I can have fun like helping my friends out. I can have fun covering things and I can have fun playing in casual games and stuff too. So it's perfectly fine. It legitimately is fine with me.
All right. So did we cover enough about SR 2017? Is there anything else you guys wanted to
tangentially a point, an observation I wanted to make based on something I learned while not playing War Machine was this weekend I went to like a huge Infinity tournament. It's like a 2-day super event. And then I was sort of like, and Infinity is like a super cool game. It's very detailed, blah, 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 super fun narrative, fun models, cool scenarios. But this weekend I'm like, maybe I'm just a War Machine player. the community, well, like the War Machine community, is so vastly different than other miniature gaming communities. And this includes Batman, 40K, etc. It's such a unique, the notion of clean play is very unique. The red is written is a very unique concept. Like it's not actually as common sense as you think it would be. Like in Infinity, it's very much red is intended a lot of times. So interpretations, like if you call a judge in an Infinity tournament, have them, you have a huge percent chance that they're going to roll it off with a D6. Like 1 through 3, it's your way. 4 through 6, it's the other way. Like, so, And then, like, that's dead serious. I was like, all weekend, just annoying crap like that. The rules are like very long and complicated. There's a lot of exceptions to the rules. It's very much like learning a language, like conjugating. So there's like, it's always this, like, unless you take like these three things and then it does this. And then there's these little arguments and nobody knows the rules. The judges don't know the rules. It's almost impossible to know the rules. Like, you'd have to, I don't know. So this weekend, I was like, the whole time I was playing, I was like, I was just appreciating War Machine. And then I was thinking, I played three games and dropped. And then it was like the apocalypse, like just the backlash and just the whole thing was just like, my back's out. The day was miserable. Like, I don't want to subject, like, I don't care about the opponents were fine, but like the whole thing. But then just the culture backlash of like, it was like, God, I miss War Machine so much. Like the whole time I was like, oh yeah. I immediately was in my iPad on the way back, like coming up with, you know, sweet Kate Orlis. So anybody who's super down on SR 2017 or the state of the game with tier lists or whatever, I encourage you to go play, competitive Infinity. And that's not to disparage the game itself. The game is very good and fun, but man, holy crap, does it not hold? I don't think it's a, and yeah. And the weird thing is that the community is also different. So like in War Machine, one of the things we probably say this constantly in almost every podcast, any podcast you talk about War Machine Weekend, you're like, oh, I go there for the people. It's not even about the gaming. I catch up with the people. And then it's about, I barely have enough time to even play the game anymore because it's just the community is so great. So then I just have to like interact with the community again. And I get to catch up and blah, blah, blah. And like they all, I feel like the other communities also kind of parrot that same sentiment. But I think it's more of like a Stepford Wife. Like there's almost like a terror behind it. Like, we're having fun, right? We're having fun, right? Everybody, I like you. You know, like it's like they're not, you know, they're just behind this like thin veil of like, politeness is this, like, you know, everybody's a cheating F-bag, like, that doesn't know the rules, and it's, like, the worst game, you know, I don't know. Whereas in War Machine, it's sort of a pretty genuine, like, you literally just make lifelong friends where, I don't know.
You know, I, at the risk of getting all, like, sentimental and stuff, because I certainly don't want to come across that way.
Yeah, you're not sentimental.
No, you're at...
You don't want to come off. You don't want to come across as sentimental, Scott. People start liking
No, I mean, like, I don't want to be, like, obviously, like... Just listen, all right? So, oh God, why do you do this to me? If it's not you, it's Brent. If it's not Brent, it's John. If it, why?
Yeah. If it's not Tango, it's Cash.
Yeah, and if it's not Cash, it's Brandon. If it's not Brandon, it's Carl. It's not Carl. But so the thing about it is when everybody talks about the community, like, I mean, like, I look at myself right now, and like, I'm just another dude from Carl Junction, Missouri, like. But through this game, I've made friends that I sit and talk with about the game for an hour and a half every week. Like, and like, you guys are like, you guys are all like close friends. Like, you know, Brent's like really close friend, Brandon, like, I mean, all these guys, Carl, all these guys, like, they're all like really, really close friends. Like, and it's because of this game that it has fostered that environment. So when people literally say like, oh, I'm going back to play, like, you know, when I say like, well, I just want to play in Iron Arena because there's people I want to meet and there's people who are supposed to come up and play games with me and stuff. Like it's easy to kind of just like slough that off and be like, oh, he's just trying to get out of it. Well, but no, it really isn't, because when I go to War Machine Weekend, that, like, that's one of the most important reasons why I go to War Machine Weekend, is for the people. Like, absolutely, hands down, it's for the people. Like, I love going just to catch up with everybody. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. But it's just, yeah, I don't know. I think it's just easier. Like, clean rules, clean play. Like, established community guidelines for how things are conducted, actual judging. Like, we sort of take for granted and complain constantly about, and by we, I mean like the Facebook community or whatever. Even like the WTC had some drama and everybody wants to like pick sides and just rabble rouse on Facebook. And I kind of like, after going to this Infinity tournament, kind of want to be like, shut the F up. Like, holy crap. You know, the judge didn't come in there and was like, well, let's roll D6. Oh, you know, like, you know. You actually had a judge who like came in and then kicked it up to another judge. You know, like there's, it sure, it may not have handled the, I guess, you know, not to get into that whole, that can of worms. But the point being is, it's kind of remarkable that we have a game where that is the issue, where it's like these ref calls and we're like, you know, but as much as like other people, there's like a subset of people who kind of quote unquote play competitive games, but they almost wouldn't want to be subjected to that type of like rigorous sort of cleanliness. But we all do it.
I think you actually hit on like a really important part, because like I think one of the reasons why we can have such an honest community in the War Machine community is because like everything is just so upfront that you don't often have, and it still happens, but you don't often have people like walking away from a game going, well, that guy's a dirty cheater. You know, like the rules are the rules and they're laid out and that they are what they are. And like, you just don't hear about that as much. Like it still obviously happens in War Machine, but, you just don't seem to hear about it as much. And I think it's because everything is so well fleshed out. And I think we as a community have a tendency to kind of forget that. And we have a tendency to kind of overlook it. So when like the community gets down on the game or something, we start beating it up. We're like, oh, Themapalooza is terrible. And like, oh, 2017 is just horrible. And we have a tendency to just kind of look at the game. We just kind of blow it up or whatever. And we don't realize that like, even on its, like, even when the game rears its ugly head, when it's not as good as they intend it to be, it is still far more clean and far more precise and a lot less ambiguous than most of the other games on the market are.
Well, also, I think we forget that just sometimes. The culture, the like established culture of conflict resolution. I'm like world famously non-confrontational. Like I tend to, it's amazing how much sort of heat I'll take because of the allowances I give my opponent. But that being said, those allowances are, they like pale in comparison. Like, you know, if I'm on one end of the spectrum of like a uber permissive player versus like an uber tight player, that entire gamut in War Machine is extremely narrow when compared to other like game communities because like the rules are narrower. The ranch that your people are like playing on isn't that big. It's, you know, between SR and the rules, it's relatively fenced in. So even if I'm allowing everything to happen, I'm still not getting screwed over that bad, generally speaking. And then again, and then if I do, it's usually so egregious that like a ref or something will happen. You know, I have a reasonable expectation that it'll be corrected. But yeah, in like Infinity or other games, it's like, you know.
I'm actually really, really happy, or significantly happier now that we have the Merc and minion options in our list building, because I feel like we have a lot more agency to because the theme lists aren't near as cookie cutter when you have a lot of those options. Like it doesn't seem like adding just one Merc option and one, you know, would make a big difference, but it really does add a lot of variety.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also happy that I can, you know, play Idrians in a theme force now, since they're one of my favorite units in Merc 3, and for good reason, because they're good.
Yeah, I sort of wondered after playing so many tier lists without Iron and Holt and like Ragman and stuff, I was like, I don't need those idiots. And then as soon as they allowed it, they're in every list, like almost every list I punched up.
I've like for troll list building, I've found myself almost instinctively going back to Lanissa Rissel. Like, it's so hard for me to build a list and not just include Lanissa Rissel, because, man, getting 2 extra inches of movement on that battle engine is, it's just amazing. I don't have another word. It's just, it's, wow.
I've actually been all over the board on what I've been defaulting to on Signar. Kind of an unusual situation there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the weird thing is, like, what in Signar are you, like, coveting Merc-wise?
Well... I really, really, really want Ragman, but Heavy Metal doesn't allow solos. So, Gravedigger's got Ragman, and I've been looking at some variation of Alexia 1, Forge Guard, and Ion and Holt.
So, in Heavy Metal, can you take Ion and Holt and Murdoch?
Yes, if you can take
that's what I thought. Okay, I'm sorry, I got that backwards. So yeah, if you can take a unit, you can take the accompanying attachment, even if that attachment wouldn't necessarily fit in the theme. Like Murdoch is obviously a trencher.
Yeah, he doesn't. They don't have the character attachments, whatever. The Menoth priest, whatever he's called. Like it doesn't have to specifically call him out. As long as you can take a unit, you can take the attachment for that unit. And then so arrangements for those units.
I wonder if there's space then in like Heavy Metal, like Haley 2 Heavy Metal for like, or if it's even needed for like Ion and Holt. I wonder if that changes the game at all. Cause like then they have 2 outlets to magic weapons. And that, I don't know. It's really interesting. I don't know. It just sounds really cool.
usually you don't need the second outlet, but it is an option. It's just a very expensive option. Because you really want to take Murdoch for the damage buff in that list.
Gotcha. So yeah, you're pretty much in for a penny, in for a pound, because you're going to pay the full 12.
I even have a random list sitting on my phone that has a Gobber Tinker of all things in it.
Ditto.
It couldn't do work with Ragman, so.
I mean, I tinkered around with Gobber. I tinkered around with putting Gobber Tinkers in Grim 2, just so I have a tinker running around to fix all them beautiful, beautiful battle engines.
Yeah, but for one more point, you got a Grim 1 Swarm, and those are not fair to park on a flag at all.
Nope, they're not. And they're even better when you get to use them as an ignition device for fire eaters. Wah! It's amazing.
Scott, we don't talk about trolls in this podcast, remember?
Oh, we do now, sir.
We've had this discussion.
Okay, you know what? I won't talk about trolls anymore until the CID releases. And when the CID releases, I just need you guys to just dial me in, and then you guys can just go away for 2 hours and just go do whatever you want to do. And I'm just going to have like this 2-hour monologue of like self, like aggrandizing, self backpatting, oh my God, fanboyism when the Troll CID releases.
Oh, so it'll be like every other podcast?
They're not going to let me do that.
That was weak. I'm sorry. All right. Well, is there anything else we want to talk about tonight, or?
No, I think I derailed us pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, we were going to talk about Crix initially tonight and do a sort of meta vendors on Crix and what we're doing to try and address it and so forth. But without Keith, we didn't feel like that would be a fully rounded discussion. So we decided to shelve it for another week. So that's why you got steamrollers and some random miscellaneous stuff, which I also think is interesting, but hopefully next week we'll be able to do some Crix stuff.
Yeah, assuming that we get Keith back. I'm sure he was just busy tonight. We'll do a meta bender on Crix if we can remember from this week to next week that we wanted to do that. Sometimes we struggle with that kind of stuff, but
so yeah. Did anybody have any dojo or anything that they're particularly
trolls?
What's that?
That isn't trolls.
Right. Exactly.
Oh, all right, I'm out there.
Yeah, we almost need like salt, like for Scott. Get away, Gale Snail.
Right. Like, you know how like salt is always used in like supernatural movies to like ward off like,
well, it's mostly because like trolls are slugs and you just want to kill the slugs. I was like, get out of here, trolls. Get out of here.
Yeah.
You take that
dry
back,
up
sir.
And die. Dry up and die.
You shut your dirty Kador mouth, sir.
Mm. Whoa.
That's fight. We're not slugs. We're amazing.
They're literally slugs. It's like Toad, Jam, and Earl.
You know, when you draw that comparison, like, I'm actually kind of okay with that because Toad, Jam, and Earl were legit.
Yeah, they're pretty cool.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of Muse on Minis. This has been Jobs.
Nigel.
Josh.
Seabass.
That was Brent, and this is Seabass.
That was RJD2.
Yep. All right. Well, thanks for listening, guys. I'll see you next week.